For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Welcome, my friends, to episode number 226 of MSR Cast, your heavy metal podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with
Sean the Metal Pigeon.
One thing I got to say in the start of the show.
Yes.
Up the irons.
Up the irons.
That's right. We are still on a Iron Maiden high from, what, 3 nights ago?
Yeah. Still recovering physically.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. You want to start with the show, or do you want to...
Yeah.
Or do you want to tease it and then come back to it later?
We can come back to it later.
All right.
Yeah.
So how are you, sir?
I'm good. Yeah.
Doesn't sound...
Maiden show took a lot out of me. I had gone to a show a couple of days before then.
What did you go to before that?
I went to go see X and Squeeze.
Oh, yeah. Not as metal as Iron Maiden.
No, definitely not. Yeah, it was cool to see X, though.
As we're talking about it, we are drinking out of my new Iron Maiden cups I purchased at the show. Merchandise.
That band doesn't have merchandise.
We're drinking dark chocolate rum and Coke Zero.
Yeah.
If you were wondering, if you couldn't survive the night without finding out what we're drinking, that's what we're drinking.
But other than that, I've been, new music. I've been listening to a lot. In fact, I would say my most listened to album of the past month has been the new Dragon Force album.
Really?
Yeah.
Surprisingly, because we started this episode off with Dragon Force.
Yeah.
Imagine how that happened.
It's just fun. It's just a fun album. And I think it's actually a really strong Dragon Force record. Leaps and bounds better than Reaching Into Infinity, which was the last one, which I thought was like had like two good songs on it, and the rest was kind of like, paint by numbers. I'm one of those guys who actually likes Mark Hudson, the new vocalist. And I know some people do, but he gets a lot of flack, especially in power metals, mostly because he's just not ZP. And
isn't he with Skid Row now?
I think he's just an English guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Good vocal. I mean, ever since he got in the band, I thought they've done good stuff with him. I really enjoyed The Power Within. The one in between that album, between that and Reaching, I can't really, like, Maximum Overload. I love that album. I thought it was really good. I from the Johnny Cash cover on there to the two songs they did with Matt Heafy on the guest vocals, they were really good. And then they sort of stumbled with the last one, but they really righted the ship this time, which is interesting because this album is the first one they've done without Victor, or Vadim, I should say, the keyboardist. He's gone. They had the guy from Epica fill in on this record.
Oh, really?
And this is the last album with Frederick Leclerc, their bassist, and he was big songwriting force in the band since. So this is kind of his last run with them, and he joined Creator recently. And it's going to be interesting to see how the songwriting is going to work in the future, because I think it's going to force Sam Taubman's always been the main songwriter in Dragon Force, but it might force Herman to get back into the mix too. But that's for the future. This album is really fun. The song we played was Stranger. That's like my favorite song on the album. Good kind of 80s hard rock chorus thing going on. The most fun thing on the record for me is the cover they do.
No, don't say it.
My Heart Will Go On. It's so good.
No.
It's not a ballad. They just ramp it up with speed and guitar riffs and wild solos, and they turn it into a Dragon Force song.
But still,
it's so good, dude. It's so and you're
all right,
a guy,
I haven't heard it yet. So
and you're a guy who appreciates metal covers. It's just a fun, joyous cover.
You say joyless?
Joyous.
I heard Joyless.
And you remember the cover they did of the Johnny Cash Ring of Fire?
Yes.
That was so good. And this is on that same level of just like they keep the melody of the original, they keep the structure of the original, but they just Dragon Force-ize it, and it's so good. And this album's addictive. It's just good, really strong songs, and the title of the album's kind of curious, Extreme Power Metal, because it's not their most extreme album. I mean, there's stuff in there that's, it's fast. I mean,
the album cover is fucking pretty extreme.
Yeah, I mean,
the album cover, looking at it, reminds me of a Contra video game.
Yeah, and I like the aesthetic and everything. The title was just funny because I remember when referring to themselves as "We're Extreme Power Metal" because they were the first ones to bring blast beats to power metal, and they were.
Yeah,
it's interesting that they're calling this album Extreme Power Metal, which I just think is a clever title.
It's their own genre.
But I guess, I don't know, my thing with this album is I just didn't expect it to be this good or for me to enjoy it this fresh air.
It's weird because this band, they hit it hard so quickly when they first came out. They were so popular, mostly because of the Guitar Hero game. But, I mean, they were...
They had a slow rise up to that point, and then when they hit Guitar Hero, it just rocketed.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they were getting up there, but not to that level.
Well, when they hit that level, when that game came out, it took them to an extreme level that no power metal band in America had ever reached before.
They're a household name.
Yeah,
I mean, people remember that band from that. You know, it's too bad they haven't translated it into sustained
success.
Yeah, because they should be selling out House of Blues every time they tour.
Yeah, and too bad it didn't lead to other power metal bands reaping, you know, the benefits, sort of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, if I don't know who they were taking on tour when they first were hitting it big, but...
Well, isn't, you know, it's interesting to think back on after that song came out and the Guitar Hero thing was so big that a lot of these power metal bands started getting their first offers for tours in the States.
Sure.
So they rode a little bit of that wave, but they couldn't sustain it themselves. Yeah. So I do think Dragon Force is poised for a comeback, though, like a major comeback. And I think this is probably the first step. And it is a really solid, old school sounding Dragon Force
record.
It comes
out as a recording. It'll be out the same weekend this episode is out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Though I haven't heard it all yet.
Yeah.
I've only heard a couple tracks.
Yeah, this is the 27th.
Let people peek behind the curtains.
They got competition that day. So
the new Bortnagar comes out the same day.
Yeah.
What else? That's it. That's all you need.
No, there's something else that comes out big that day. I can't remember. I was looking at the list the other day. Anyway, so yeah, go check out the Dragon Force record. Because it's...
I think I will.
It's everything you want, and the Celine Dion cover is just
everything you don't
chef's
want.
Chef's kiss, just fun to listen to. I love that song anyway, but Dragon Force, I love these guys. I want more covers from them, more Dragon Force covers, please. So
okay, yeah. Sure. All Celine Dion covers is what you want. Is that what you just said? Right.
I think that's the best song they could have picked. I don't think that she has another one.
All right. Okay, fine. All right. So, do you want to talk about the next band we're going to play?
Yeah, yeah.
This band is called Disillusion. They are on Prophecy Productions, and they are a German band. And they surprised the hell out of me.
Oh, there's what we were just listening to.
Yeah, we were just listening to it.
Yeah, that was good.
Very Paradise Lost in parts. Very... Mm-hmm. Catatonia influenced, progressive German, not power metal at all, but just progressive, a lot of clean vocals, a lot of great harmonies,
yeah,
a little bit of a growly stuff in there.
Some of the when they were doing the little transitions in the song, it reminded me a little of While Heaven Wept.
Okay, I can see that.
Not like the vocals, but just the musical approach sometimes, you know. So that's cool, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear more. I've listened to this album once so far.
Okay.
It's one of those, it's on my listen list.
Right.
My list for albums of this year, fucking huge.
For just stuff you've just been checking out?
Yeah, not just stuff that I've been checking out, but that's even longer. Just stuff that's made it into my top 40 already.
I don't know how you keep a top 40.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
Well, it's not supposed to be top 40. It's supposed to be top 20, but
right.
All these bands keep on like seeping into it, and it's going to be very difficult to pull my top 5, my top 10, my number 1.
I'm not going to think about it until late October.
There's more stuff coming out.
Yeah, I'm just not going to think about it.
But let's get into the song. It's called Time to Let Go. There's a couple things on this album that sort of throws me off a little bit. And when you hear the album, you'll be like, okay, I know what he's talking about. But it's a really fucking solid album. I'm really digging these guys a lot. So check out Disillusion. The album is called The Liberation, and it came out at the beginning of September, so
all right.
Time to let go.
Yeah.
for passing, harbors to the sea, tides keep receding, and everything will drift away. And time will reconcile a halt without. Fallacy, a dream in the dark. Time to let go. Shadows and mystery. In a maze of moments, wandering in need, begins a new beginning in the shades of long abyss. Still wrapped in manacles, you stare across the sea. Horizons wherever they lead you will see. And time will reconcile.
Welcome back to MSR Cast 226. Morning the Southern Skies with Exhorter. We know something about that recently. Almost flooded out.
Yeah.
It was the last time we recorded the podcast.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that's a lot what this album is based upon. If you don't know who Exhorter are, they are a sludge thrash metal band from the New Orleans area. And this is their first album in like 27 years.
Mm-hmm. Some would say responsible for pioneering the sound that Pantera
took over.
Yeah.
Stole from them, as some would say.
You know, borrowed, influenced by, inspired by.
Stole.
Weren't they friends, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were. So this is, the last full-length album came out in 1992.
Yeah. I knew it had been a while.
It's been a fucking long time, guys. So you don't know who's in the band. Vocalist is Kyle Thomas, who's actually now the current vocalist for Trouble.
Okay.
He was in a band called Floodgate. That was pretty good from like the later 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's kicking an ass on this album, man. Marzi Montazeri,
yeah,
is the guitar player, one of the guitar players. And Sasha Horn is the drummer on this album.
Marzi is kind of
a Houston staple.
Name that everyone sort of in the local scene knows. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've met Marzi a few times. I was introduced to him a couple times and run into him every now and then I'll see him at the odd show. He's not out and about all the time. But I do recognize him sometimes.
And the drummer, Sasha, he's also wasn't Forbidden for a while, but he was also in November's Doom for a while.
Hmm.
From like, he was on their 99 album and then the 2009 and 2011 album. He also played on both of These Are They albums.
Okay.
Which was Paul Kerr's side project.
Oh, okay.
So it's a fucking great lineup, dude.
Yeah.
I got to say, it's probably right now one of my favorite thrash albums of this year.
Okay.
It's so fucking good.
I'll have to go. I knew it came out. I'll have to go listen to it. Yeah, because, thrash for me this year has been sort of empty.
Yeah.
I don't know about, we didn't really talk about it on the podcast that much, but I found myself not really pulled in by the latest Death Angel record. It sort of passed by me. I did check it out a few times.
I like it, but I can see what you're saying.
Yeah. The last one ended up on my top 10 list that year. So this one is, I might have to go back and check
it out.
But
they're coming in December.
Oh, okay. That's
so
cool. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing it live.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can sort of get on that page with you a little
right,
bit.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, this Exhorter, man. Such a fucking great album.
Yeah.
It's kicking my ass.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
And Disillusion, I loved everything I've heard so far. Yeah. So
we were jamming more during the break.
Yeah.
Really good band. We can definitely hear more of the German aspect of his vocals coming
out. Yeah.
At some point, he reminds me of Moonspell.
Right, yeah. During the more spoken, talky singing parts.
Yeah, the little... toned down parts. Mm-hmm. Great album.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to reach high, but it's definitely something that's going to get a lot more attention.
The thing my one observation when we were listening to that other song was that they're doing prog and I'm never bored. You know, it's like clearly this is like prog structures and stuff. And I'm just sort of like, they're always putting interesting riffs in there. It's like
melancholic prog.
Yeah. It's like, all right, this is cool. Oh, that's a nice riff. You know, that kind of thing. It's where you're always sort of engaged.
And the vocal harmonies are really good. Tracking and all that stuff that they're doing.
Yeah. Everything I heard was good.
It's really cool. Let's do it. Let's talk about Iron Maiden.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
Where do you want to start?
What was your experience? Well, you have the better story.
I guess. We went to the Derek Riggs autograph signing beforehand. It was this pub, the Goose Acres Irish Pub, which is actually walking distance from the pavilion. Because we parked in the... If you know...
The tough walk, Houston Heat.
No, wasn't that bad. It was really, really, really close, dude, to tell you the truth. We parked our car over there in the parking garage.
Okay.
Was, you know, we just left it there the whole time.
All right. Right behind the pavilion?
Yeah, it's this area where on the waterway, and there's a bunch of restaurants and businesses and stuff like that. It's one of those outdoor mall type areas.
The market, the market right there across the street from the pavilion.
Yes, yeah, something like that. There's
It's like one of these. It's like one of these town center developments where there's like a grocery store there, and there's like this big empty space in the parking lot. So they decided to build like a little walkable, shoppable thing.
Not quite like that. There's a big movie theater right next to there.
Right, yeah.
It's nearby the Woodlands Mall, but it's like the area between the mall and the Woodlands Pavilion.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of little restaurants and stuff like that.
Non-Houstonians, well, let's just say the Woodlands is like a very high value real estate. I mean, it's, you know, it's like an upper crust type place.
Sure. Okay. I can go with that.
Yeah.
So, the signing from Derek Riggs was from 2 to 7. We left my house, which is about an hour away, about 3 o'clock, right before 3 o'clock. A buddy of mine who was there, actually, he was number 3 in line. He got me the ticket for number 5 in line. So when I showed up there, I met up. I went in there and I was like, "Oh, I had no idea what was going on." It was like in this the pub. It's like 2 or 3 stories, and part of it's on the waterway. It's really nice. And you go downstairs, and there's a bunch of metalheads and Iron Maiden shirts, or the Iron Maiden fan club put it together, and they were hanging out there. And I ran into a guy, and I didn't know what to do. So I finally found somebody, and I asked him. I was like, "What do I need to do?" He's like, "Do you have a ticket?" I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Here's my ticket." And he's like, "Number 5. He's like, "Where the fuck you been?" I was like, I don't know. He's like, "All right, go on in." There's like this little side room, and they had a merch table where you could buy prints and all this other kind of stuff, his book and all that. So anything that you bought from them already came with an autograph. If you brought anything, you had to pay $20 per autograph.
So the fan club was running the whole operation?
Bruce were with Derek.
Okay, gotcha.
You know what I mean?
So he was just there. Was he in the official capacity with the band, do you think?
No, not really. Well, he hasn't really been in any capacity with a band since like 92, something like that.
So, there's
a big falling out with him and the band.
But they know that he's there around the area, you think?
No idea.
Wow, that's interesting.
The fan club brought him. So
right, yeah.
Who knows? I don't know.
So I take it he probably wasn't at the Maiden show afterwards.
Probably not. Right. Who knows?
Wow, that's interesting.
That's a good question. I don't know. So I bought my print, and I got a smaller print, and I brought my albums to get signed.
Mm-hmm.
So it got to my turn. Shook his hand. He was very nice. A little awkward. A little strange, but. That's okay.
Some quaint English chap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much. And before he would even take anything that you're going to get signed that wasn't purchased by him, $20 each. You had to give him the cash.
Right.
Then he's like, "Oh, cool. What's your name? How do you spell your name?" Luckily, I was wearing my Metal Geek shirt that had my name spelled on it, because he kept on asking me how do you spell my name. I just pointed to my shirt. And then I got some autographs for a buddy of mine who brought some for him. And, you know, he was a real nice guy, and I gave him a work, one of my business cards from the guy who actually books guests. I'm like, and I told him all about the show. I'm like, "Yeah, you should come down." Saw him put it in his pocket. So maybe Derek Riggs will come back to Comicpalooza in Houston.
Right.
Never know. It'd cool. be cool to get more shit signed by him.
At least you got him the card. That's cool.
That's right. But, after that, we went and met my buddy over at the pub. It was so crowded in there. We went to the pub next door, which was not Sherlock's, but it's the other one, Baker Street.
Okay.
Yeah, so they had, like, it was Sunday, so they had half off happy hours. So I was drinking some whiskey and coke, and had the worst piece of grilled fish I've had in my life. That was expensive as hell.
Right,
but trying to stay on the diet, I was trying to find something that wasn't super fried, or like a burger or something. So they had a piece of cod, and it was not good. But what are you gonna do, you know?
Right,
what I mean?
Yeah,
you're sort of at the mercy at that point.
Yeah.
And then we left and walked over to the pavilion. We walked into the side entrance into the big open inside area called the lounge. On one side, they had a merch table, one of the merch booths. And the other side, they had a big screen on the wall, or projecting a big screen. They were showing one of the football games, and everybody was over there watching that shit.
Right.
So we got in line. I ran into Dave, my co-host from Metal Geeks. We hung out for a while. Bought a shirt, bought some patches for my jacket, for my battle jacket, and bought these cups that we're drinking out of.
Right, yeah.
And then we left, went to our seats, and then that's where it took a quick little downturn. Want to talk about that?
Yeah, let's see. Yeah.
Okay, let me explain. Let people know your experience getting to the place.
I mean, it just fucking rained on the drive over there. It was raining
while we were in the restaurant, we avoided it all.
And keep in mind, like, this is just a couple of days after it had flooded the city on Thursday when it was all over the national news.
Yep.
And we thought, like, okay, stop raining for a few days. Maybe things will be settled down. Sunday, it just starts pouring down rain on the way up there. We're walking to the venue, and we're still getting, like, drizzled, like, rained on enough to, like, dampen everything and stuff.
But it luckily didn't pour.
Yeah, we got lucky. Me and my friend John, we were on the lawn, so we trudged up there to the lawn. I hate this venue. It's so fucking precious because you have these parking lots there, which, thank God, they're free. Because if you have to pay for that fucking parking, I would just lose my mind.
I pay for parking, but I was like covered in
doors
and shit.
These are cramped. They're free lots, but they're cramped lots. They're kind of more towards businesses, like in the daytime.
Yeah.
Offices. So you're in a corporate office parking lot, which is not cool when you're trying to leave the area. And there's like everyone that's trying to get out of this little small cramped parking lot. Anyway, so you trudge up to the venue. You have to walk past this stupid obnoxious lake with these dumb swan boats and stuff. And walk up this hill and go up to the thing. And surprisingly, I didn't get the pat down. Usually you get the pat down for metal shows, like the full lift up your shirt, turn around like an asshole. And, you know, and this time you just got wanded. And I was like, all right, that's refreshing.
I had to do that shit because I was wearing my battle jacket. I just had to take it off. That was it.
Oh, okay. I was thinking I was expecting the full police officer pat down they usually do for metal shows there. Anyway, so like we get in there. We're on the hill. It's still raining. It kind of stops and you see this double rainbow in the air. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw pictures of that.
But
Dio was looking over the show. That's what it was.
Yeah. But the hill was so soaked. The lawn is basically a big hill. Was so just already inundated with rain. We were walking on there at first. You could feel yourself sinking a little bit. And when we stood there for the show, by the time the show finished, we had sunk like 5 inches into the earth. Like just standing there and just...
It was the most... So when you're standing... Iron Maiden, nobody sits down for Iron Maiden. You
right.
stand the whole time. And the way this pavilion is designed, it's at a slope.
Yeah.
Fucking kills your back and your knees and your feet because you're at the slope.
The hill is a slope and the seated concrete area is a slope. Yes.
Exactly right.
I mean...
We sound like we're old crotchety guys bitching about this, but...
No, man. It's a real thing. And, like, the ground's wet, so we're not going to sit down, so we're standing the entire time.
Yeah.
We stood in almost the same spot from, like, 6:30 to 11 because we were dead center on the lawn, pretty close to
Can't you bring, like, a blanket or something in there?
Yeah, we didn't think about that. But,
okay.
But we were dead center on the lawn.
I felt like you're faulting.
Like, about, you know, like, not too far from the very front of the lawn, we were dead center, so we were not going to let anyone, like, post up in front of us or take our spot. So... and there are some people sitting on the lawn, like by choice, sitting on the lawn at this super extreme angle. And so you can't even see like half the goddamn stage. And it's just like, what are you guys doing? There's all this empty space over here.
I'm gonna make a little rant real quick.
Yeah.
Oh,
fuck this venue and their views.
Yes.
Yeah, fuck that
Not
venue.
Not their political views, but
No, their actual stage views.
So the tickets that we had were seated. We were on the far right, like section 211 or something like that.
Oh, damn. I know what you're talking about already.
And there's some big-ass obstructions on the side of the stage.
Right.
I couldn't see the front of the middle of the stage at all.
Well, was part of the obstruction Bruce's catwalk?
No.
Okay.
It was something that was hanging down.
Oh, gotcha.
I don't know if it was part of their stage setup or if it was something that's always there. I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah.
But when they brought out, like, there was a couple times where they had, like, stuff coming out from the back part of it, I could barely see that shit.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
I could see the whole stage perfectly.
Right.
That was not a problem. But when they had stuff in the back, they had like the big Flight of Icarus that came out there, mm-hmm. that was out there. Could barely see it.
Oh, that sucks. When that was so awesome.
When the plane, I could see like the plane and shit. Right. And another thing, another weird thing is the first part of the show, it was like all military backdrops and shit like that. They had the tarps over everything, mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about? They had Nico behind one of these things, like a tarp, like he was in timeout or something. Like, what are you doing to Nico?
Right.
And at one point, they changed the set, and he was open. He was out in the public. But I'm like, why is he, like, in, like, Iron Maiden jail or something? What's going on here? It was right. weird.
My friend Brent was there and from Sweeping Ancient. And I was
about to say, you mean Brent Bailey from Sleeping Ancient available now?
I saw the angle that they were sitting at.
Yeah.
It's like you could only see, like, a part of the stage. I was just like, man, that sucks. You pay all that money for that really close proximity, and then you get kind of short-sighted by the shittiness of the stage.
Yeah.
It's like, can you guys broaden this a little bit more? This venue's huge. Can you, like, make the stage a little bit wider?
Right.
Like, is it just me, or did the stage at the Toyota Center, the basketball arena, seem way bigger than that
one? Oh, yeah. Yeah, much bigger.
And it's just pathetic for a pavilion anyway. It's just like, you have to really, you know, work hard at, like, getting a good view there, like, when you're trying to get tickets, or just say, like, I'm going to settle for the lawn. I'll just show up early.
And sometimes I've been to shows at the lawn there, and, you know, they'll do, like, $20 tickets for lawn tickets.
Right.
It's fine. It's, you've got to prepare yourself. Bring a blanket. Hang out with some friends.
Right.
But when it's pouring, when after it's been raining and stuff like that, it's not going to work.
I mean, we were, like, drenched, and we were, like, wet the entire time, and, like, by the end of the show, we're so exhausted. We never actually got to meet up with you guys over there. And
we're talking through text the whole time. But
yeah. And like, you know, like another friend of ours, Matt and Courtney, they were there, and we never even saw them on the lawn. There were like 16,000 people at this show. You just,
there's
like,
gotta be more than that.
You can't find anyone.
There's more than that. There's gotta be more than that.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, but you know, on the lawn, trying to find someone in the darkness on the lawn. No. So, we just trudged back to our car afterwards, just like so relieved to be sitting down. And then we went to this gas station afterwards, the Shell station, and it's nothing but Maiden fans in line, like buying Gatorade and right. Snickers bars. Just like, oh, I need to like refuel.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was an endurance, man. It was just, I remember the fucking Raven Age. I remember standing there.
Let's talk about Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah.
Or no. What's their name? The Raven Age. I made a Facebook comment. I was like, Avenged Sevenfold wants their shtick back. I know why they're on the tour. Let's get that out of the way. It's Steve Harris's son, the guitar player in the band. All right, we got that.
Yep.
The band is not good, and the sound, they had a horrible sound too. I mean, they could sound fine maybe on album or something like that, but I was bored of these guys.
I don't understand why Iron Maiden has this fundamental dysfunction about, and keep in mind, I'm going to criticize the shit out of them right now, but this is my favorite band of all time. So that being said, Iron Maiden has a problem with the nepotism factor going on there. Now, I know that Bruce's son's band has never, they haven't really gotten that bump that George Harris's band is getting with the Raven Age. But
and Steve Harris's daughter opened up for him one time, too.
Lauren Harris's band opened up for him a long time ago. And then that, I just sort of ignored it as just like, oh, I'm going to go hang out and look at the merch and whatever. And it wasn't a big deal back then. But it was sort of like, you guys couldn't pick some awesome band to open for you. Well, the first time, I remember when they had freaking Motorhead and Dio opening for him. It's like, that's a bill. That's an awesome bill. And, you know, Queensryche and Halford.
Show. Yeah.
You know? And it's like, okay, that makes sense. Lauren Harris, all right, I get it. You're trying to be
Coheed
nice to
and
your,
Cambria.
Trying to be nice for your daughter and stuff. At least Coheed and Cambria, it's like, well, okay, it's not my first choice, but at least they're
very entertaining.
At least they're a band that is big enough to deserve that sort of slot and that pop.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I don't understand how a band like Sabaton can open for them in Scandinavia in stadiums, and they do really well.
They're doing
for
their own tour right now, but if Sabaton was on an Iron Maiden tour in America, this whole stadium would be eating out of their fucking hands.
And all these things are booked so far in advance. I mean, I just don't understand why because I read the Raven Age's bio when I got home. I was curious about how many. This is not the first time they've opened for Iron Maiden.
Right, I'm sure.
and they've just gotten the benefit of the doubt, and they haven't earned this. Well, let me ask you a question. There's a real telltale sign of how shitty this is for fans. If the Raven Age was playing a club in Houston headlining tour, where would they play? And how many people do you think would attend?
They would play the small room at the warehouse.
I was thinking they'd play, yeah, either small room at like White Oak.
Yeah.
And I don't even think – I think they'd maybe fill it like halfway.
No.
And like if they, you know, they played Scalper, you'd have like 20 people, 30 people there.
Right.
Why is this band opening for Iron Maiden? I get it. I know why they're opening for them, because it's George Harris and it's Steve's son. And on one hand, you could say, hey, look, you just have to deal with it. He's Steve Harris. He can do whatever he wants. But at the same time, like, dude, there are not many more Maiden tours left. You should be helping out metal by propping up a band that deserves the big slot. Like, last time we went to see him, Ghost got it. And that's great. Ghost got the slot, and Ghost is going to be a headlining arena band soon.
They're gonna be one of the bands that's able to be an Iron Maiden
to carry
style.
On and, yeah. And keep the thing going and stuff. And it's like, I don't understand how a band like Sabaton can't get that slot, you know, or some other band that's like even big. Like, I would totally be understanding and accepting if, say, they brought along an actual Avenged Sevenfold
or
to be
Fozzy
there.
Or a band, Fozzy or
something like
something
that.
I wouldn't
maybe like the band, but I would understand that makes sense.
Yeah.
But the Raven Age, come on. And I don't want to be mean towards the band. Like, I think that the musicianship, like the guitarist, George is the guitarist, and
yeah.
I think the musicianship, I heard some stuff in there. I was like, hey, that's not bad sounding. Like,
I agree,
the riffs are okay. But
it's the songs.
Well, you know what I think it is? I think their vocalist is the epitome of everything I hate about metalcore.
Mm-hmm.
Vocals, especially. Like, every line he sang, we started listening for this. Every single line he sang had the same melody to it. It's just this sort of like, you know, build up, rise, then drop, build up, rise, drop, build up, rise, drop. That's the only thing that guy knew how to sing. And every single goddamn line of lyrics that guy sang was build up, rise, drop in the same tone of voice. Like, there's no passion. Like, why am I listening to you sing? You sound like you there's nothing. I don't know what I'm supposed to get from that.
Why don't we take a step away from the negativity? Let's talk about the good stuff of the show. Iron Maiden kicked ass.
Yeah.
These guys are in, what, their late 60s?
Yeah.
And have more fucking energy on stage. Bruce, man, all the costume changes. There was one point he was dressed with, like, sort of like the Dracula outfit. It was like, I'm like, oh, James Rivera, he would be mad.
I loved how zany the show was.
Yeah.
I loved how they sort of seemed to loosen up on this tour. Bruce was doing more costumes than ever.
Yes.
More crazy hats. When he had the double flamethrower, it's just like...
The flamethrower was great.
It's like, I was just thinking...
The fencing with Eddie was great.
The fencing with Eddie was the best use of Eddie that I've ever seen them do. Because normally it's Eddie who goes up to stupid Yannick Gers, and Yannick tries to kick him in the nuts or whatever, and then runs underneath him. And you're just sort of like, all right, Yannick, get out of here. And this time Bruce and Eddie having a sword fight.
Can I say Yannick was being the most Yannick I've ever seen him in a long time? Dude is just fucking... he's just a strange... It totally makes sense why he's in the band. Having that sort of guitar, especially in a live setting, fucking works wonders.
It beefs up the sound.
But he's such a strange individual.
And I love Yannick as a guitarist. Like, I love the work he did on Tattooed Millionaire.
Yeah.
I love the stuff he did for Maiden. I like him. I'm a Yannick guy.
Yeah.
But
I'm on that Yannick train.
But what I saw with Bruce and Eddie was so much more fun and entertaining than anything Yannick could do.
And he was just... You know, spinning his guitar around his neck. And
yeah, the whole shtick.
The weird, I don't know.
The wife, this couple in front of us, I think it was the wife's first Maiden show, and the guy was like a big Maiden fan.
Yeah.
And she's like, man, that guy is just like, oh, I got the Energizer bunny. just keeps going.
Let's talk about the set list.
About as perfect as you can have it's really one of the most enjoyable set lists.
Nothing really new. Nothing past...
for the greater good of God.
Yeah.
Which seemed to be the biggest lull in the crowd around. I sensed around me.
I went to the bathroom during that song.
I mean, I personally, I love that song and I love that record and I was happy to hear it, but I could tell the audience sort of
said. It's not a great live song.
Well, I don't think they, yeah, I don't think it's, I don't think it was able to be performed the best way with just the band. I think you need strings and or the orchestra doing something behind it. Can we have a fucking Maiden show with an orchestra finally? Can we at least do that before these guys hang up?
Great.
Please.
So that was a, the last, like the newest song. But Bruce kept on saying, he's like, if you guys want to hear newer stuff, we'll be back.
Right.
I promise you, we're going to come back. So they're probably going to do another tour with, you know, newer song. Because this is a Legacy of the Beast tour. This is the tour that goes along with the video game and the comic books and all that kind of stuff. The sort of greatest hit package they put together.
I sort of feel like this is the – maybe not – I don't think it's the final tour that they're going to do like this, but I think it's one of the closing of – you know how they've been doing the Power Slave era tour, then they did the Seventh Son tour. I don't see them, frankly, doing a Fear of the Dark, No Prayer era tour.
No.
I don't think they're going to even touch
that.
So I think that the Legacy of the Beast is kind of a way for them to do that. I mean, hearing Flight of Icarus.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Was perfect.
And they did a couple of fucking Blaze songs, too, which I was surprised.
Yeah, and I've heard Sign of the Cross before, and I think, and I know I heard the Klansman before. Yeah,
Klansman was awesome.
It was great. I mean, I know people around me didn't really know that song that well. I could tell. But Sign of the Cross was always great. So, yeah.
All right. So let's just go down the set list real quick.
You could tell Bruce Wolf singing that song, too.
Yeah, he did.
Wait, we're not even talking about the best part with Sign of the Cross. The fucking set that happened, that they changed to when they went to Revelations.
Yeah.
The set design of the stained glass Church of Eddies.
I bought that shirt.
Why haven't they thought of this before and done this before?
It's amazing, right?
Why is it taking it was the most beautiful set I've ever seen in person.
All the sets were amazing. I said,
the Gothic candelabras with all the candles.
Yes.
Oh,
the plane in the World War II plane. High. Was fucking amazing.
I didn't expect it to move around that much.
And I love what Bruce said. He's like, I can't believe we started the set with this.
Yeah.
He's like, where are we going to go from here? We're going to get fucking better.
Yeah.
I was like, it's like almost like they blew the load on the first set design.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
No.
So they did Aces High, Where Eagles Dare, 2 Minutes to Midnight, The Klansman, The Trooper, Revelation, For the Greater Good of God, The Wicker Man, which surprised me. I didn't know they were going to do that. Sign of the Cross, Flight of Icarus, Fear of the Dark, Number of the Beast, Iron Maiden, Encore. Then they went away for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Evil That Men Do, which was amazing.
That was great, yeah.
Hallowed Be Thy Name, and then Run to the Hills.
Yeah. It was nice to hear Hallowed again back in the set list.
Usually they end set list with Iron Maiden. That's usually when I leave. Like, okay, we can get out of here a little early, but they didn't do it. Run to the Hills.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I have on this podcast complained about the inclusion of Iron Maiden on every single show. Yeah. When you hear it, when you're there in the moment and they start playing it, you're like, Iron Maiden is going to get you, you know.
No matter how fucking far you are.
But like, hearing, to me, this was a... I don't know if I had to pick what was my favorite Maiden set list. They did this tour in 2012 or 13 or whatever, 14. It was for the Final Frontier where they played a lot of those songs. I really enjoyed that set list a lot, but this is probably the best set list they've ever had, just all purpose history set list. Revelations is an amazing song live, and why don't they play it every single goddamn show? For God's sakes, just play that every single show. It was so good.
The last time they played that,
I think that was when the crowd around me got the most pumped up for that, because they had it introduced the new set, the Gothic candelabras, the Church of Eddie, and everyone was just all in, and just people were going nuts around me. The lawn was full of some many, many, many drunky people. I can tell.
I bet. Let's move on. Let's talk about the next band we're going to get into. We've been talking for a while now. Let's get into this track. This is a band called Silver Tomb. If you don't know who they are, it's Kenny Hickey from Typo Negative, Johnny Kelly from Typo Negative, and Hank Hell, who used to be in Seventh Void, who was, you know, one of Kenny Hickey's last bands, and Joseph James, who was from Agnostic Front. This is not what you expect it to be. It's not Type-O Negative. It's very... Listen to it a little bit earlier.
Joseph James.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. All
right. It, you know who he is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very... Vocally, it's Kenny Hickey doing the vocals. You know, he did a lot of vocals back in Type-O Negative, so it's not new for him to do that. But his vocal style, it's not... It's like the lower end... sort of like Chris Cornell style.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not the high shit that he can do, but that medium level.
So it gives it that grunge vibe to it.
It gives it a modern day grungy, like Alice in Chains type vibe. I fucking dig this. The full album's not yet. Just a couple songs have been released, but yeah, I'm digging this. This is Silver Tomb. The full album is called Edge of Existence. Will be out November 1st.
Yeah.
So check it out. They're all over Spotify and Bandcamp and all those good places. So here is the song "Love You Without No Lies."
Very Peter Steele.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And we're back to the show. We just got finished listening to a band called Everfrost. The song was called Winter Rider from the album Winter Rider.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, yeah, I haven't heard these guys before.
Yeah.
Super power metal-y.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A lot of keyboard wankery in there, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vocalist totally reminds me of Tony Kako.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I mean, a lot.
I mean, the songwriting reminds me a lot of Sonata.
Yeah. Tell me about these guys.
So they're from Finland. This is their second album. But there's their first album on the label. So it's their label debut.
What label are they on?
Rock Shots Records, I think.
Okay.
Label. Yeah. I got sent the promo actually through their PR guy and took a chance on it. Thought the aesthetic was a little silly because it's like a lot of manga stuff on the cover. And it's like,
I know how much you're into manga.
A unicorn. I was like, all right, that's a little ridiculous. And I made the mistake of clicking on the music video and I was like, all right, guys, I enjoy the song, but the video is a little like over the top. But I went and just listened to the album and I cannot stop listening to this record. And it's such a the singer Mikael Salo is his name. He's such a good dead ringer for Tony Kako, like circa 1999 sort of, but without all the extreme accent angles that Tony's voice has. The songwriter is this guitarist Benjamin Connolly, or Benjamin Snow Kid as he's known in the promo sheet for the band, and I think he's got it. I think he's got that good instinct for what he wants to achieve. The short sort of deftness of the sound is very Stradivarius, Sonata,
yeah,
Arctica influenced.
Extreme power metal.
They're not hiding their influences. They this is what they want to sound like. But what's interesting about this band is that they're doing the name of the band Everfrost is the name of a town that is a fictional town in this universe they've created, and they've released this album with a actual manga comic book that comes with it. And it's a storyline about these characters.
Multi-dimensional storytelling through music and words.
All the songs,
I like that kind of stuff,
are about these characters. These four characters who live in this town and what they're trying to find out about the outside world. Yeah, and it's
narrative-driven.
Narrative-driven, it's an own universe, but he's really carefully worked it to where the songwriting really is sharp and poppy. And in fact, there's actually a Kesha cover on the album, too, that they weave into the storyline, too.
What?
Yeah, but they make it their own. They make it like a power metal song.
I don't know any Kesha songs.
So. You wouldn't know this one. I don't think it was like one of her big ones, but it's I remember that I when I went back and listened to the Kesha song, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. I offer this album as sort of a soothing balm for anyone who felt absolutely burned by the recent Sonata Arctica album disaster.
You don't like the new Sonata Arctica?
I think it is honestly the worst album that they've ever done, that Tony Kako's ever written.
Can I say something?
Mm-hmm.
I actually like it.
Yeah?
But I'm not a Sonata Arctica nerd like you.
Right, right.
I don't know, like is a strong word. There's a couple of good songs on it that I've enjoyed.
The first time I listened to the new Sonata, it was late at night, like 2 a.m., and I was listening to it because I saw some people in the power metal Reddit were just smashing it to bits, and I was like, oh, I gotta listen to this. How bad is this? And I was like, no, it's not that bad. I actually like some of this stuff. I must have been really tired because when I went back and listened to it later in subsequent listens, it just got progressively worse and worse and worse. It's bad. And
the rest of our episode is going to be nothing but the new Sonata Arctica.
I put a review up on the new and improved metalpigeon.com where
you
I
got a review on there
where I had
where,
the right.
Where can people see the review?
The metalpigeon.com. And it was the most painful. It was one of the more painful reviews I've had to write. Not that I trash Tony and everything. I mean, the guy wrote Ecliptica. He can do whatever he wants to. But at the same time, what are you doing, man? Like, this is bad. And it's disappointing. And so if you're disappointed by New Sonata, Everfrost, Winter Rider, this is the album for you. You'll tweet me and thank me later. Because this is the most exciting Finnish power metal, you know, on the horizon right now. I think this band has like a bit, like a really, really interesting future ahead of them if they keep up this quality. So yeah.
I'm looking at your Sonata Arctica article right now, your review.
Yeah.
On themetalpigeon.com.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to read this later.
Yeah.
This is going to be good toilet fodder. So before Everfrost, we had Silver Tomb, which is the new band by Kenny Hickey from Type O Negative fame. Johnny Kelly's in the band. Joe James from Agnostic Front. This is, I want to say, you know, grunge-influenced heavy metal, a la, like, Alice in Chains type stuff.
Yeah.
I dig it, but it's a little bit dark, you know? Like, Alice in Chains, to me, is dark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I never understood why they got lumped into that grunge, you know, blanket, just because they're from the area, and I can see that and all that good stuff, but...
Yeah.
I'm really liking this Silver Tomb. I can't wait to hear, like, the full album.
Yeah.
I think Kenny Hickey, he's not... a phenomenal vocalist, but for the style that they do and what he's trying to accomplish, he's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely influences from like the medium level of Chris Cornell, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
I was actually listening to the newest Jamie Josta podcast, and there's an interview with Kenny Hickey in there.
Oh, okay.
Dude is so fucking Brooklyn, man.
Oh, yeah. I haven't listened to that one yet. I saw it on the list, I think. Yeah,
pretty interesting.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe go back and... That's why I started listening to this new stuff.
So right.
I'm like, cool. I was a big Type O Negative fan. And just wanted to throw a little support out for him with his new venture.
Right.
Like, he needs my fucking help, you know what I mean?
Right.
But let's talk about the next band.
Isol?
Isole? I guess Isole.
Isole, yeah.
Let me pull them up real quick, but...
Another album called Dystopia. Hmm.
I know. I saw that one. I was like, oh, is it better than the Megadeth album?
I like Dystopia.
It's not a bad album. But I like Isole. I think that's how you pronounced it. Let's see. They are from Sweden.
Okay.
They are epic doom metal. This is their maybe sixth or seventh album. I've been into these guys for a while. So you know that the band that's Arab Altor?
Oh, right. Yeah. This is
sort of... I don't know if this is their side project or if Arab Altor is their side project, but one or the other is true.
Right.
Yeah. Guitar player and guitars and vocals. The both guitar players and the vocals.
Yeah.
I dig these guys. They have a little bit of Candlemass to them, a little bit of Catatonia to them. They get some brutalness to them at some
right.
point. Like stuff like November's Doom would do. I think these guys are great. And I haven't really paid attention to them much in the past few years. Like, I didn't listen to the last album at all, but I've been really liking this new album a lot. Dystopia.
Yeah.
They're on Hammerheart Records. Lyrical themes are life, sorrow, and pain.
It's very...
very epic doom metal.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think? What did you think of the song when you heard it?
It sounded okay. I probably need to listen to the entire album in context.
You're not as much of a doom metal fan as I am, are you?
It takes, you have to be something special for me to be pulled in and doom metal. And then even then, you have to be something like coming at it from an unusual angle, I guess. I don't know. I am picky about doom metal, I think. Okay. Yeah.
But we'll let everybody listening to the show make up their own minds and see how wrong you are.
Okay.
I'm joking. This is the track called Forged by Fear from the album Dystopia. Here's Isole? Isole?
Isole.
Whatever.
Isole. same, moving at stereo. Life's the same, except for my shoes. Life's the same, you're shaking like tremolo. Life's the same, it's all inside.
Back to the podcast, and
thank you. I appreciate that.
A little tribute to the dearly departed Rick Ocasek, which that just happened like a couple of days ago.
Yeah. The Cars are amazing, dude. Those first couple of albums,
yeah,
are just really, really good.
Rick Ocasek. I have an interesting story with Rick Ocasek because that single he did he had a solo career in the mid '80s, and yeah. He had a single come out called Emotion in Motion, and I'm told that...
I don't know if I remember that.
It wasn't very successful, but I'm told that I loved that song so much as a kid that I would ask my mom to play... We had the 45, that I would ask her to play it over and over and over again.
I could see
and
that.
So I remember vaguely the song, so I went back and listened to it, and I was like, yeah, I mean, it's not that good, but I guess young me liked the hook, so...
So we don't... play the Cars on the show, but I listen to them.
Yeah.
So we decided to do a cover tribute to Rick Ocasek, Moving in Stereo with a song. This is the band Fu Manchu from their album We Must Obey. And they did a great, you know, fuzzy stoner rock version of this track. It's a good song. They had some stinkers in their career. They had some good songs, but there's this one album. I can't remember exactly what it is. 80s era, mid 80s, produced by Mutt Lange, sounds exactly like Def Leppard. Mutt Lange produced Def Leppard, so I mean,
that was his sound, yeah.
It was his sound, dude. It was like, God, if you want to sound the same with another band, just get this guy to do it because I mean, everything on this album sounds like Def Leppard, even like the vocals and shit. I'm like, did they get the guy from Def Leppard on this album?
Crazy. I'll have to go and check that out. I don't know much about Fu Manchu. I've heard them in passing before and stuff. They had that one song on the radio for a while, right? It was like a buzz, like a 107.5 buzz song.
I don't think they were ever really on the radio. Okay. I don't think they were that big.
Maybe I'm not thinking of the right band.
Before we move on, I want to apologize for that last segment. We had a little bit of technical difficulties with one of our mics.
Yeah, and just decided to stop working.
Yeah, so I tried to fix it a little bit in post, but if my audio was the one that was off, so I apologize for any inconvenience to your ears. We will make it up to you by jamming some more metal. How's that?
Yeah, let's work? Let's do that.
So before Fu Manchu, we had the band Isolé, Isol, whatever you want to say. The album is Dystopia, not the Megadeth album, but this is the song we heard was Forged by Fear. I really like these guys a lot. Modern, you know, epic doom metal to me.
Right.
It's amazing shit. So what do we got next?
Finsterforced.
Don't be forced to say it correctly.
Finsterforced.
There you go.
Sure, it means something cool in German.
It does, actually. I had it. I just got to pull it back up now. Give me 1 second here. Can you play some music while I'm doing this?
I like the song title here, which is sort of like, I guess this is Latin, right? Isse homo?
I guess so. So the new album is called Their Fall, Derfall. These guys are a German band, folk black metal, I would call it, progressive right. Folk black metal. The album we just played a song off of is called Their Fall, and the song, like I guess you said, Isse homo.
Mm-hmm.
The version of this song on the album is 36 minutes.
Right.
The version we played is a radio version, which is 5 minutes and 28 seconds.
Yeah. Wise move making the edit.
We've already talked for 30 minutes about Iron Maiden. We're not going to play a 36 minute song.
It's be interesting to ask them like how they chose what.
Yeah.
To use for a 5-minute version of a 36-minute song.
Listen to the 5-minute version we're going to play, and then go listen to the full version
right.
on the album. Then it's a really epic track. I really liked it, but I couldn't justify playing it that long of
right.
a track.
Yeah. Yeah, we already did our long songs episode.
We did recently. But yeah, I like these guys a lot. What did you think about them on your first opinion?
I mean, I liked it. I don't know what it reminded me of. I'd probably have to listen to it, the entire record. But folky, but not saccharine folky.
Yeah, totally. It's yeah. blackened very, folky.
Very subdued blackened folk, yeah.
Epicness.
Right.
There's a lot of epic aspect to this album. I really like it. It's really, really fucking good. It's tasty.
Yeah.
So let's get into it, and we're going to play around with our mics a little bit more and see if we can fix it even in more. So we're about to get some epicness in this entire segment right here.
Yeah.
You'll find out in a minute. So here is Finsterforced. Be right back.
Yeah. Place where it's
this album, dude. I'm telling you. I haven't heard it all yet. I know you have.
Mm-hmm.
This is album of the year for some people in this house, maybe?
I mean, well, yeah. I mean, possibly. I mean, it really is impressed me. Winter Thrice was a great record.
Yeah.
This one is just totally different, though. You know, it has no Vinterswerk for the first time since...
It's all Vortex, right?
It's Vortex and Lars Nedlund.
I hear a lot of this total prog on this album.
Yeah, there's a lot more clean vocals on it.
Yeah.
Without Vinterswerk there, it's almost like they had to change the way they wrote songs because his voice as a screamer is so... it's like a dagger in your ribs. Vinterswerk's, and then whenever he would help on the harmony clean vocals,
yeah.
Vinterswerk's tone is unmistakable, and it adds a certain type of texture to the music, and it really set the tone for their albums for the past, you know, two decades. And without him there now, I think I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just different. This is a different type of Borknagar album. It sounds a lot more brighter and lighter in a way.
Is that the way they pronounce it, Borknagar? I've always just said Borknagar.
Yeah, you're probably right. Borknagar is just the way I've always said it.
Okay. Potato, potato, right?
Yeah. Also, because I like to call them Borky sometimes.
Bork, bork, bork.
But yeah, I've been impressed with this. I've listened to it like, I would say, four times.
Wow.
Front and back.
That's impressive.
In fact, I was listening to it on the way up here. And it's really interesting. There's nothing on there that I can say is like mediocre or anything. Like everything was really engaging and interesting. So I'm still trying to process it. There's this one song on there called something about Father's... I don't know. It's I forgot. It's like a real ballady type of track.
Really?
Yeah. I wish I remember the name, but it was such a weird, unexpected thing from them. It was like it was almost as unexpected as like the Garm moment on Winter Thrice. You know, just like way more melodic than I ever thought these guys could be. So
that's interesting to hear. It comes out this week this album comes out. I mean, as this podcast comes out, it's out. So, yeah, the album is called True Norse. The song was Up Norse,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It is a strange song, too, you know?
Yeah, this is a song that I have heard a few times, and it's very, very prog rock influenced.
Yeah.
Is the rest of the album that same style?
It varies, but they return to this sort of palette, I would say. You know, so
I can get into that.
And they have like, I guess there's like a new guitarist in the lineup. There's a new drummer. So they have some, you know, I'm assuming Austin's still writing most of the riffs and everything, but there's new blood in the band. So it is definitely different, you know? It's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is to this one. Because everyone loved Winter Thrice kind of universally.
Yeah.
This one, I could see it being polarizing.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I'm interested to really hear the full album now.
Just because, honestly, it's the most strikingly different Borknagar album since they did the acoustic thing a long time ago, which still had Vinterswerk on there, so it still had that sort of thing to it.
I like that album, though. It was very good.
Origins, right?
Yeah.
I grew to sort of appreciate it. I didn't like it when it first came out.
Really?
It was too strange for me. But I get what they were trying to do. So, yeah.
So, this is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This is their 11th album,
mm-hmm.
including Origin, like you mentioned. But I consider that an album.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I remember seeing them... 1999, only time I've ever seen them live, when they toured with Emperor.
Vortex was on vocals.
Yeah. Who else was on that tour? It was Divine Empire and Picado. Wow.
Yeah, Divine Empire. That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
That's a blast from the past right there.
Jesus.
I used to be friends with Jason Blaskowitz back in the day. I haven't talked to that dude in a long time.
Yeah.
Long time. All right. So before Bortnagar, you know, you had me saying it that way. Bortnagar is, was
pre Borky
with Finsterforst, great band that I discovered. A new album which came out recently. They are from Germany. And I believe the song title is basically their name. It comes from a lake in their area, some kind of like abbreviation or a nickname for a lake or something like that.
That's a terrible band name. I mean, on paper it looks nice, but pronouncing it, it's just, it's rough.
Yeah, I could see that.
I just read this interview about with Tegan and Sarah.
Who?
The pop band Tegan and Sarah. And they mentioned how early in their career they were calling okay. themselves Sarah and Tegan.
Black Forest. It's about a black forest.
Black that Forest makes, would
that's
be better name.
Now.
Yeah.
And not a cake.
Well, so in this interview, they were talking about how their name, they used to call themselves Sarah and Tegan. And the manager said, you know, when you say Sarah and Tegan, no one really knows what you're talking about because the words kind of blend in together. But if you say Tegan and Sarah, there's enunciation there that prevents, that makes you recognize what they're saying instead of Sarah and Tegan. So maybe just think about these band names a little harder.
Well, if you're going to make fun of a band making their name based on a lake, how about Children of Bodom?
Hey, at least it's recognizable and it sticks in your mind.
I guess.
And you can say Bodom.
Or Bottom.
And, you know, Borknagar, you can say Borky, you know.
It's true. Like the Swedish chef always says, Bork, Bork, Bork.
There's no mistaking when someone says, did you hear that new Borknagar album? No one's going, excuse me? They're like, no, I never heard of that, you know?
Yeah, everybody should hear it, though. They're really good.
Yeah.
I hope they actually tour again.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
don't kill me. Don't ruin my hopes, man.
Unless it's Lars and ICS Vortex to go out on the road and maybe they get a temporary guitarist and stuff like that. Because I think Austin has like a day job.
Mm, that could be true.
I think Lars does too. So
I don't know. So that's about going to wrap up this episode. We can talk about Iron Maiden a little bit more? We can. I'm joking.
It was great. It was great seeing them again.
Let's talk about Hell's Heroes real quick. They announced the first initial lineup for the show.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm going to go this year for sure.
It's April 18th, 2020.
In Houston at the White Oak.
Yeah.
They announced, so, Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Who could it be? Is it Satan? Is that right?
Yeah.
Satan. They announced Slaufeg,
yeah,
which I'm excited for that. Their album that came out this year is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Who else did they announce? Traveler, who we played earlier this year.
Yeah, and one of my favorite bands in the past couple of years, High Spirits, which is Chris Black's, one of his many bands that he does.
Yeah.
Kind of Scorpions-ish rock and yep. stuff.
And who else did they announce? They announced one other band, right? Magic Circle.
Magic Circle.
Yeah, which I listened to them today, too.
And then there's still some stuff to be announced. This is just the first announcement, so.
They haven't announced any headliners or really anything like that. Magic Circle, I listened to that today once they made this announcement. I'm like, oh, they had sort of like a lo-fi Hammerfall vibe to it, like Hammerfall songwriting style, mm-hmm. but in this retro new wave of British heavy metal style that's popular, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Let's talk about where people can get a hold of us on the internet. First of all, you can find MSRcast and our sister show, The Metal Geeks Podcast, on iTunes. Subscribe to us there. Give us a review there. You can find us on Spotify, on Stitcher. You can find us on Google Play, all those good places. You can find us at MSRcast.com or MetalGeeks.net. You can find us on all kinds of social media at MSRcast as well as at Metal Geeks. And you can find my co-host at...
at The Metal Pigeon on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Check out the new website, TheMetalPigeon.com, where you can see him talk crap about the new Sonata Arctica album.
Yeah.
It's a good read. We're going to end this episode with a band that a good buddy of mine, I've known for shit since high school, probably junior high, man, texted me last week. He's like, have you heard this band yet? And I said, no. If you're turning me on to them, they probably suck. Guess what, Mark? They did not suck. They're actually really, really good. The band is called Eternal Storm. I really dig these guys a lot. It's epic, progressive, blackened folk metal. It sounds like a... we're playing a lot on this episode, I guess, that style. But, yeah. It's a really... I think it's a concept album. I'm not really sure what's going on with everything yet. But there's some long songs and some shorter songs on it. But we're playing the third track on the album, which is called Detachment. Check them out. Go listen to them on Spotify. Support these guys because I think they're really good.
Yeah, I liked what I heard.
It's sneaking up high on my albums of the year. So
wow.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say?
I want to mention that I don't know if we're going to have another episode out or recorded before the Amorphous show.
Probably will, yeah.
Maybe, but if we don't, that's the next big thing on the agenda for us show-wise. We missed a lot of shows that came through here recently. The freaking Elvady Corpiquani thing was the same night as Maiden.
That's true. It's another band was playing that night, too.
And I don't know if
you're... Black Label?
Yeah. Black Label, and then like Ginger was playing at Scout.
Yeah, there was four metal shows in one night. What the fuck?
That was crazy. And then the night before the Amorphous show, that on the Wednesday before that Thursday, is the
Enforcer Warbringer.
Yeah, I'm gonna skip that. I can't do two.
That's my birthday.
Back to back. Are you going to that one?
No.
Okay.
If I go to a show, I'm probably gonna go see Tenacious D.
Ooh.
I haven't seen them. They toured after the first album.
They're there that night?
It's actually on my birthday.
Yeah, you should go.
I'm like, that. I've got to go to that show, man. Yeah. Come on.
Where are they playing?
They're playing at Revention Center.
Okay.
They're fun to see live. I mean, it's fucking Tenacious D is Jack Black.
Right.
If you haven't been watching, Jack Black has his own YouTube channel now called Jablinski Games. He doesn't really... It's supposedly, it's him and his family doing his blog, right? There's stuff where they're at Disneyland and theme parks, and he does stuff with Tenacious D going like on tours and stuff. But it's just everyday stuff in his life, and it's really fucking funny.
All right.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. This is the blog of his life, basically.
Right.
He always like, Jablinski Games, we're going to play games today, and they never play a game. It's exactly what you expect from a Jack Black YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
All right.
So, on that note, we have a couple things we need to say at the end of the show.
Keep it metal.
And up the irons.
Up the irons.
That's right.
Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.